LinkedIn News.
If you just look at what awe does for you, it increases your well-being, reduces stress, reduces PTSD in veterans, so mental well-being. And then physically, awe, two findings, you know, awe elevates activation of the vagus nerve, this big bundle of nerves that regulates your heart and your breathing and your digestion, very good for you. And then we found that awe is correlated with less inflammation produced by your immune system, which is a major pathway to disease, right? So just these little moments of awe turn out to be some of the best forms of medicine we can pursue.
That was Dr. Keltner. I'm Leah Smart, and we'll be right back with our show.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
Hey everyone, from LinkedIn News, I'm Leah Smart, and this is Everyday Better, a self-improvement podcast where every week I sit down with some of the world's brightest minds and bravest hearts to learn how we can improve ourselves, our relationship to others, and the world around us. Today, I got to hang out with Dr. Keltner. When I first thought of awe before reading his book or talking to him, I imagined it was the experience you have when you're in the middle of nowhere looking up at the stars, when it's pitch black outside. These moments that we don't get as often as we like to get them. But Dacher says we can actually find awe in every day to make our days a bit brighter. He also says that it positively impacts our health, which is really important. And he shares why we need collective awe now more than ever to feel connected to each other. So here he is, helping us all find everyday awe.
I teach human happiness and human emotion at Berkeley, and I have this lab that generates all kinds of findings. I do a lot of work out in the world, you know, trying to get practices related to awe and compassion to technology and to schools and to healthcare settings. You know, I got to this work because my mom and dad were both really interested. My mom taught poetry and literature, kind of an activist. My dad's an artist. And I was just interested in the emotional world, and in particular, the emotions of beauty and awe and kindness, compassion. And they both were activists in their own ways, anti-war activists, working in prisons, etc. And they taught me that you can try to convey and enable these passions like awe or beauty or compassion to help people's lives. And I'm just starting to realize 30 years into the career, that's what I've done too, but I did it through science and they did it through the arts. And so my intention is to enable people to find more meaning in their lives, because I got lucky to have a career and parents and forms of scholarship that allowed me to find a lot of meaning in life during very hard times. And I try to do that in my work.
I loved hearing a lot of your story. I'm also from the Bay Area, so I grew up in Oakland. You and I share a very similar purpose. So my work is about how to share what I'm learning through people, through my own research and reading and understanding around how we find and experience more meaning in life and how we live with more clarity and intention every day in order to accomplish that experience of feeling meaning and feeling like we matter and that we continue to have something to give to the world. So I didn't have the experience of like parents who were saying, hey, you know, here's how you can experience awe, go teach it. It was more that like I followed a path that led me to a place by the time I was 28 where I went, I'm in the wrong movie. This isn't my story, right? And so I had decided to just shift to something that felt so clear to me and is now very clear. So it's interesting because you've worked in science and you work at Cal. You could easily have just stayed in your lab, but you choose to and chose to share this. Why?
Yeah, I think part of it was just being raised by parents who really wanted to see the world change. Part of it is the atmosphere of Berkeley and the East Bay and Oakland, which is really the hotspot of a lot of social change, frankly. And then it was certain realizations where people would bring me into context and I would realize like awe, the feeling of wonder and mattering, like you said, Leah, and finding meaning, which comes out of experiences of awe. I'd be in these contexts and I'd realize what I had to offer was relevant, most poignant. And I write about this in the book, Awe, I went in to do restorative justice work in San Quentin prison, you know, 180 guys in there, you know, here I am, this guy who's coming out of the lab. And I felt like they were finding awe and meaning and gratitude and kindness through restorative justice work. So every time that I went to contexts like San Quentin prison or Pinterest or Apple or a healthcare setting, you know, medical doctors with COVID work during the pandemic, I realized just like you, you know, your story, we all need these moments of awe to find out why our work matters, right? And I happen to have a language and some findings and justification for that inquiry and ways to do it. And it's frankly, your personal story of finding what matters to you in your career and work. That's what I get to be next to in these adventures outside of the lab. And it's changed my life.
For everybody listening, how do you define awe? What's the difference between awe and emotions like wonder or experiences like wonder?
Yeah, hard question. Awe is an emotion that we feel, and you rightly identified it as such, when we encounter vast things that are mysterious, that are beyond our understanding of the world. It could be a big idea. It could be something in nature. It could be a spiritual experience where you feel like you're connecting to some transcendent force. It could be moving in unison at music. Vast mysteries produce awe. And then we've done a lot of laborious work showing awe is really different from wonder. Wonder is a state that follows experiences of awe where you're like, I'm wondering why I get goosebumps when I hear this music, or I'm wondering why I care so much about this idea of justice. So wonder is more of a knowledge-based state where you're searching for answers that is produced by the experience of awe. And then awe is different from beauty, which is really close, right? Beauty is, you look at a beautiful forest of trees, and beauty is the feeling of like, this has these sensory qualities that are pleasurable and beautiful, but they aren't so vast and challenging to our knowledge as awe is. So you can separate awe from wonder and beauty.
Okay, so awe is the vast experience that kind of makes your head spin.
Yeah.
I cannot grab this.
Yeah.
Got it.
That is the technical term, head spinning.
You talked about stories or experiences people were going through or having everyday awe in your book. And you talked about the eight wonders of life as ways that we can sort of, or avenues we can use to go into awe. Tell me about those.
Thank you. Yeah, we were, you know, defining awe. We were measuring it in goosebumps and tears and activation of the vagus nerve, kind of making progress. And then our lab was really wondering, like, what is awe about? Like, what is its core soul, if you will? So we decided in a kind of a spur of the moment to gather stories of awe from 26 different countries. And this is not usually done in science. It's really honoring the narrative and the meaning making that humans do in stories. We get these stories from Mexico and China and India and Brazil, all over the world. And we start translating them and making sense of them. And what we realize is there are kind of eight sources of awe that I call the eight wonders of life, which are moral beauty, when you're blown away by people's kindness or courage or overcoming, collective movement, music, sports, nature, spirituality, and then two really interesting ones, Leah, that, you know, I still think about today, which is big ideas. Like, there are people that are blown away when they hear about dark matter. Like, whoa, we're all invisible, you know, but there's no substance to us.
You're speaking my language. That's me.
What's your favorite big idea?
You just reminded me of a conversation I had earlier this year with the director of science communication at NASA. Her name is Michelle Thaler. We all walked out of that conversation. I mean, I cried. My head was spinning. It's awe in the sense that everyone understands, which is we are so small. Quantum physics.
Yeah.
Awe for me. I don't know what to do with myself. I want more of it. And I'm like, I don't know what to do here. Her talking about that, her sharing some things about the future of where Earth was headed. It was amazing and shocking. And I was like, I have to walk away from this. It was a whoa moment. And I don't know how long I can let my head stay in this space because it might pop off.
And it thrilled me, you know, being involved in knowledge production, that there are people like you, Leah, who they're out there and they're like, big data blows me away. Evolution blows me away. Quantum physics, dark matter, the idea of free markets, you know, et cetera. And then the final wonder is life and death. You know, that around the world, watching life come into the world, watching people die, the cycle of life, which is such a deep universal to existence, right? It speaks a lot to things like why we're awestruck in spring and fall. You know, spring's when life emerges, fall's when it starts to leave us with the falling of the leaves. So those are the eight wonders. And they are, as you said, avenues, easy avenues to finding awe and why your life matters. You know, listen to music that brings you tears and you listen to it. Why does it speak to you? And suddenly awe is telling you, here's a thing that you really care about that's beyond yourself.
Is there an avenue you found easiest in your research or simplest for everyday awe?
Yeah, and that's a great question. You know, when you think about these eight wonders, think about what's easy for you, what's hard, right? For me personally, nature is really easy, like a lot of Western Europeans and people in the United States, California. Moral beauty. Because of my scientific background, I learned how to code facial expressions and vocalizations. You know, I walk through the streets of Berkeley and almost every day I see moments of awe, you know, of just somebody sharing resources or helping an unhoused person or protesting. So nature and moral beauty, easy. Hard for me in some forms of music. I feel it a lot in certain moments, but really being broadly open to it. And then the real hard one for a lot of people is death. How do I think about this human universal of dying, which I had to do because my younger brother passed away, and I write about it in the book. I felt mystified and awestruck and deeply traumatized. So how do I make sense of it? How do I find meaning? How do I use the wonders of the moment to learn something new about life? So that was a challenge.
Yeah, you talked about after he passed, seeing him in different shapes or freckles or things that would remind you of him in other people.
Yeah.
Is that the continued experience of awe, or would you say the awe was captured in your experience of you and your family sitting there with him as he passed on?
And that is such a deep question, Leah, and science probably will never be able to answer that, which is, you know, when does an awe experience really stop, or does it just continue? And I think you very thoughtfully suggest that certain deep awe experiences are always with us, right? As a layer of consciousness, you know, people who've raised children will say there are the layers of time and your children grow. It's always that opportunity for awe. And that's how I felt about my brother passing is, he was so central to everything in my life. And when he left, I was disrupted. And then through wonder, I returned to his presence in my life, whether it's quantum physics or what have you, of like his voice, his way he saw the world, how he appreciated humanity, his humor, always there. And that awe experience of his passing and the grief and reflecting on his life is always around me to remind me of our life together and what he gave me. So you point to one of the great opportunities for us, which is to access awe that really is part of your life, to think about your past or your grandparents or moments of nature and how they're similar to your experiences now. And that, I think, is one of the great challenges and opportunities of this new science.
Yeah, it's mind-bending, especially what you're referencing about how people continue on with you. You almost have to just accept it versus try to wrap your mind around it perfectly. It reminds me of the person I mentioned, Michelle Thaler, talks about how her husband died. And when he died, you know, she had went into this immense grief. But in our conversation, she said, when you understand the reality of space-time, I realize that I'm still holding his hand. We're still falling in love. We're still together. And I'm still here. And I was like, I don't even know what to do with myself. But again, I'm in awe.
Yeah.
So it is, you know, that's a much deeper experience of it. But it's so powerful.
Yeah. And wow, did you just summarize that? Took me 2 years of grief and various experiences with music and in India and in the mountains just to have that come to that understanding that human life is always with us. Even when they go, they're in our minds. Maybe they're in our cells. We feel them. I felt my brother's hand on my shoulder, and that's real. And I'm glad there's quantum physics to bend our minds and to think about how that could be true scientifically.
So this book, you know, you're sharing the definitions of awe, the places that you've been able to find it and the stories that you've captured, but it's also about getting people to be more intentional about cultivating it. One thing that came to mind for me so clearly is in order to experience awe, we have to be willing to slow down. You know, simple, but not easy, I should say. We are constantly bombarded with so much. You mentioned people could experience awe playing video games. But how do we get better at bringing awe into our everyday and into experiences that are familiar to us?
I've thought so hard about that as I was writing the book. And it's just so good for you to have 10 minutes of awe. We have learned scientifically that awe is about as good for you as any experience you can have. You know, it helps your mind and heart and immune system and concentration and relationships. It begs the question, like, how do I get it? You know, how do I find it? And so we've started to develop ways to bring awe into everyday life. And it's just as you said, Leah, you captured it really nicely. pause, slow down, don't rely on expectations or categories, sort of push those to the side and then sort of engage with your world in an awe-inspiring way. And there are very clear ways to do this. Like when you're out in nature, you can look at small things and then expand your vision to a larger view of things. When you're listening to music, you can listen to individual notes and then expand it out to see the patterns of notes. When you're looking at a wave, look at one individual wave and then a system of waves. We've been developing these techniques, just published one paper on it, where just a minute of awe a day, just slowing down, pausing, looking for patterns, looking at how small things connect to larger patterns, reduces depression and anxiety in people, makes their bodies feel stronger. So I think that, you know, people hungering for awe, which we are today, use those eight wonders as avenues, music, nature, moral beauty, etc. And then just make sure you're pausing and slowing down and really connecting yourself to the larger possibilities and things around you.
We're taking a quick break. We'll be right back with the co-director of the Greater Good Science Center at Berkeley, Dacher Keltner.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. In the last 100 years, we've seen financial markets swing, new currencies come and go, decades of savings lost in days, all showing that a retirement plan without a guarantee, quite simply, isn't enough. So more than a retirement plan, TIAA makes you a retirement promise. A promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. A promise that pays off. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
Hi, I'm Tomer Korn, LinkedIn's Chief Product Officer. On my podcast, Building One, we dive deep into what it takes to build great products. Recently, we had Zach Perret, the CEO of Plaid, and he shared about his struggles building a financial app for consumers and how he was able to turn it all around with a critical pivot. Take a listen.
I personally couldn't resonate as much with the consumer set that we were trying to reach. I just didn't have that level of empathy. When we made the shift to building a B2B product, though, I was building the product that I wanted. My co-founder and I were creating the product that we wanted ourselves, and we had so much empathy for what that product was.
Such a great insight.
You know, in that sense, we got lucky because we were creating a thing for ourselves. And then the people that we were talking to also had the same problems we did. They were fintech developers. We'd been a fintech developer. We'd been trying to build a fintech product for a year. And so we had such deep empathy. We had such a clear ability to...
If you want to hear more of Zach Perret's story and the lessons that follow, listen and subscribe to my podcast, Building One.
And we're back with Dacher Keltner. I was going to ask you about the connection between awe and well-being, and I'm thinking about physical and emotional. So there is a clear tie between our physical and emotional well-being and the experience of awe.
Very much so. I mean, if you just look at what awe does for you, it increases your well-being, reduces stress, reduces PTSD in veterans, so mental well-being. And then physically, awe, two findings, you know. Awe elevates activation of the vagus nerve, this big bundle of nerves that regulates your heart and your breathing and your digestion. Very good for you. And then we found that awe is correlated with less inflammation produced by your immune system, which is a major pathway to disease, right? So just these little moments of awe turn out to be some of the best forms of medicine we can pursue.
Okay, based on your research, there is a blueprint to experiencing awe. It's not necessarily that it's like as unique as a fingerprint. It may be in the experience itself, but we can use these blueprints.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a blueprint's a good analogy, which is each listener can be thinking about those eight wonders we've talked about. Think about where they can pause during the day, where they can quiet the mind a bit, be open to larger things that are important to them. Right? Like, you know, the sky or the solar system or the idea of the oceans or the sense of justice or courage. Be open to those big themes and the awe will point you to better well-being.
Hey, me here. So I asked Dacher if there is a blueprint for finding awe, and I want to share six ideas for you to find everyday awe straight from the Greater Good Science Center, where he's the founding director. Number one, on your way to work, drop off, or commuting home, slow down. Let a moment of awe emerge because you're making space for it instead of rushing. Number two, notice your senses. Before you go to work or in between meetings, ask yourself what you see, smell, taste, hear, and what you can touch. Number three, and I love this one, go on an awe walk. A lot of studies have shown that spending time in nature lowers stress and improves your physical and mental health by decreasing your blood pressure, enhancing your focus, and strengthening your immune system. Experiencing awe is actually one of the main factors that makes nature so powerful. So try taking an awe walk and intentionally seeking to be awed by your surroundings. Number four, grab a piece of paper or a journal and think back to an awe-inspiring moment that you've had recently. Spend 2 minutes writing down what happened in detail. Where were you? Who was there? And how did you feel? Number five won't be shocking. It's step away from your screen. In the world of being addicted to our phones and showing everyone all the moments of our lives on social media, take a break. Don't post, don't scroll, don't text. Just do something entirely for yourself and by yourself or with another person committed to doing the same thing. And six, let yourself linger when you do feel the awe. Don't take a picture, don't post, just be there. Okay, back to the conversation. You know, I live in New York City, and you know, I think a lot of us, no matter where you live, we all feel busy. But the one thing that forces me to experience awe is I have dogs. And so 4 times a day, I am outside with those dogs walking. My golden retriever does not want to go back inside typically, so she wants to be out. And at night, when I go out, I can see the moon, look up at it. And it sounds kind of silly, but I'm like, hello, moon. And I look, and I just try to stare 1 second longer than I would normally stare at it, because that is where I feel like I kind of cross over into this experience of awe.
Yeah. I mean, such a subtle analysis, Leah. I mean, I think we do a lot of things that actually provide us awe, right? I go to yoga. I love yoga. But one of the things that makes me tear up is moving our bodies in unison, making eye contact with strangers, you know, transcending the human divide, if you will, that I'm a solitary self. Brings me awe. One of the things I heard, you know, talking about awe so much, you know, and felt it myself is when you raise kids, you know, they're spitting up on you and you're cleaning diapers and they're crying and waking you up, but they take you to all these moments of awe, you know, and you're sitting in a park looking at the clouds when they're on the swing and you're like, this is amazing. And so I think, you know, that's one of the reasons we do science is it gives you a concept, a lens to look at the world. And suddenly you're like, God, I love walking my dogs because they get me out to think about life and they get us to awe in surprising ways.
You know, we're talking a lot about kind of the experience of awe from the internal, the me perspective. How does awe impact our relationships? And you talk about collective awe.
Yeah. Thank you, Leah. Yeah. You know, we're, as Vivek Murthy, our Surgeon General, has noted, we're in a crisis of loneliness. People feel really hunger for community. We've lost a lot of a sense of collective and awe. Even when you feel awe out in nature or you're in New York City and you're awestruck by the leaves in the park, those moments of awe activate in our minds the sense of how strongly we're connected to other people, that we're part of a collective, right? I think one of the best examples, obviously, is spirituality, but also music. When people have these intense awe experiences in music, they suddenly feel like, this is my people, right? They have the same sensibilities as I do. They care about similar things. And music fortifies our sense of collective and belonging. And so it's just another surprising benefit of this interesting emotion is that it brings us a sense of belonging.
You remind me too of, you know, I grew up going to Cal football games and going to football. It always felt like football was something where it felt like no matter your differences, you felt like one, even though it's got the competitive nature. So there's two teams, but it felt like everybody was moving in unison toward a common goal. And it feels deeper than just like the simple kind of goal setting and let's go be competitive. It almost felt spiritual to be at a game in a stadium with all these people in the same colors as you're in, moving toward or rooting for one team and one collective goal.
Yeah. And this is what was wonderful to write the book is, you know, there were a lot of sports awe experiences, you know, Argentina football, et cetera. And you're absolutely right, Lee. I mean, it's fascinating that once you start cheering, moving in unison, singing the college song and watching the plays and your minds are all joined together, it does for a lot of people feel transcendent and spiritual. And then you step back and your rational mind is like, wait, here I am weeping when they score a touchdown and hugging strangers is just the power of awe. So
you wrote this book and you continue to do this work. The Greater Good Science Center continues to do more of this work. What is something you've learned about awe that didn't make it into this book and that you'd want people to know? if anything?
One of the things that I really felt that this awe science challenged me to think about, and I felt it in the conversations like this one, right? That people are having these transcendent experiences in various everyday places, right? Your experience at a football game, which is so thoughtfully recounted. I remember in London, I gave this talk and this guy said, I was just on the tube and I had this moment of moral beauty or transcendent collective awe where I just looked at a stranger, we made eye contact, we recognized each other's humanity, which happens all the time. And that issued this challenge that we've subsequently, after the book, gathered data on these 1 minute awe experiences where you just allow people to slow down, put away their devices, pause and breathe, open their minds, and then think of a source of awe for them. What's awe-inspiring around them? This is an awe-inspiring conversation. I marvel at the idea you and I have these brains that produce language that now allow us to arrive at these insights. And just to do that work 1 or 2 minutes a day is all you need, right?
Go find our 1 minute. I love that. It's almost like I relived some of those moments as I'm telling you about the moments. And I imagine maybe that was similar for you around like writing them down or speaking them out loud. So it's almost like I'm, you know, getting a double up of awe from that one experience. But I want to end with having you complete these three statements. The first is better humans are.
In search of awe, wonder, and mystery.
Better work is.
A context that allows you to find what is awe-inspiring and point you to the work that really matters for you.
And a better world has.
More opportunities for everyone to feel everyday awe.
Awesome. LOL. Thank you, Dacher, for coming. Thank you for being here. I just so appreciate the work you're doing in the world to share what you're learning in the lab with everybody else who doesn't get to be in one. So thank you.
Yeah, Leah, spectacular questions. You've got me scribbling down notes of new studies that I need to do on how long awe lasts and so on. So thank you for your careful reading of the book and for this amazing conversation.
That was Dacher Keltner, co-director of the Greater Good Science Center. One big thing before we go, and I don't think it's going to shock you. Go make time for that 1 minute of awe. You don't have to wait for the next hike or beach vacation. You can make it a part of your life starting today. Look at something with a little more curiosity than you have before. Really listen to that song you love. Stare at the moon and say hi. Whatever you do, find a way today to start making awe an everyday thing. If this conversation resonated with you, share it with the first person who comes to mind. You never know how it could help them out. And support other people like you, who you don't know, in finding our show by leaving us a rating before you go. While you're at it, write a one-sentence review telling me and the team what you love about Everyday Better. And as always, you can get me in your inbox by signing up for our weekly self-improvement newsletter, giving you practical tips on how to level up with small steps every day. Find it at linkedin.com/everydaybetter. That's linkedin.com/everydaybetter. Everyday Better is a production of LinkedIn News. The show is produced by Alexis Ramdow. Our associate producer is Grace Rubin. Asaf Gadron is our sound engineer. He makes sure we sound good in the studio. Joe DiGiorgi mixed our show. Enrique Montalvo is the executive producer of LinkedIn Editorial Productions. Dave Pond is head of news production. Courtney Koop is head of LinkedIn Original Audio and Video. Dan Roth is the editor-in-chief of LinkedIn. And I'm Leah Smart. Thanks for coming with me, and I'll see you next week.